The next item on the agenda. The next item on the agenda this evening.
Perfect. Thank you.
Hey, come here.
One more and we go. No.
Right, the next, I've got everybody here. Tammy's here. All right. We are back in session. The next item on the agenda is the business session, the organizational item, in the approval of the agenda and consent items. Is there anybody that would like to add an item to consent? Twelve is fine with me. 18, I think that we'd wanted to, for Mr. Flowers' purpose, to have some indication on some of the budget items. So I'd like to keep that off the agenda this evening.
I just had a quick question.
Go ahead.
About 12.
12.
Two of them were. Looks like the only changes were how much money they'd be getting, what step they were on. Were we having difficulty getting people in at the other step, or?
No, and I assume you're talking about the job coach and the coordinator for the ASRD. The coordinator for the ASRD is at the request of the SELPA director and the superintendent of the SELPA. They've extended the work year and the pay because she's taken on more responsibilities, and that's fully reimbursable through the SELPA. And then the job coach, we established that position last year with the new program, and in reviewing and looking at the program and evaluating the program, it appears that the individuals in that classification are working much more than we thought they would, and we think we set the range too low, and it needs to be comparable to the instructional assistants for mod severe, so we wanted to move it up to that.
Those are the only two questions I had on that item. I could be on.
All right. So put that on consent. Anybody else? Anybody like something removed from consent? Hearing none. Is there a motion, please, to add item number 12 to?
I will move the approval of the agenda consent items, adding number 12, also with the amendment to 17, which there was a name change on the payroll documents, and also reflecting the change to number 7, where we will be voting possibly on up to 3 candidates, the agenda items too. So with those amendments, I will move it.
Been moved and seconded. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the motion is so ordered, which then takes us to item number 6, an information report, an update on school reconfiguration task force.
Good evening. I must say it's very intimidating having to give a presentation after our students. They did such a fabulous job. It's kind of hard to walk in their shoes. So I'm just going to start and give a little background on this presentation. At the beginning of this year, one of my goals was to form a task force to review, revise, or make recommendations for district programs and school configurations that support student achievement and the goals of the district strategic plan. What really started us looking at this was Edgewood Middle School, High School. This was the first year that Edgewood High School now had 12th graders, and we've been watching Edgewood grow from 9, 10, 11, 12, and with one principal for two schools. And so that was one of the things that we wanted to look for at this task force. Another thing that came up during the discussions was looking at feeding patterns of our elementary schools, because several of the feeding patterns had to do not necessarily the closest school, but for other considerations. And so one of the thoughts were, as we're looking at this, to also look at those feeding patterns. We We've got a great committee of parents, teachers, administrators, and staff, district staff, and I'd like everybody here representing the committee, please stand for us because we had quite a committee. Thank you. Thank you for being here. We had administrators representing our elementary schools as well as our middle schools and our other middle schools and the high school. And we had parents representing not only parents of our middle school and Edgewood High School, but parents from other elementary schools as well. We met once a month. We started, I think, our first meeting was in October, and we've been meeting ever since. And so tonight, we'd like to bring you up to date in terms of what our thoughts are. We're not putting this on the agenda tonight for a vote. We wanted to share with you not only the process that we've gone through, and where our recommendations are, and to ask the board at this point to give us some of your thoughts, things, other information you might want to know, and to get some form of direction from the board in terms of what our next steps might be. So at this time, I'd like to introduce Mr. Travatore, who's going to take us through the PowerPoint.
Well, thank you, Ms. Kaplan, for that eloquent introduction and synopsis of kind of where we've been. Mr. Flowers, I'm remiss in that I didn't welcome you, and also my name is Mark Travatore. I'm the principal of Edgewood, and I failed to introduce myself in that regard earlier. So as the superintendent kind of outlined, you know, every school has a history, if you will, and I don't want to belabor you with the details of Edgewood's history, but high school up until 1988 and then consolidation, Edgewood High School and West Green High School, had been a middle school up until, or solely a middle school up until 2010, and then we opened up Edgewood High School. And we've, in a sense, evolved over the last 3.5 years to the point that we are right now. So starting this school year, having 4 full grade levels along with the 3 traditional grade levels at Edgewood Middle School, we thought it prudent to examine where we are, you know, as 2 learning communities sharing one campus, and kind of taking stock, taking inventory into some of the things that we're doing, and to see if there maybe is some redundancy and ways we can improve efficiency, and also capitalize off some opportunities that we haven't done so yet. So that's kind of the backdrop of this. So we thought it prudent to assemble a committee, and again, folks out here in the audience are some representatives, very comprehensive group. I think at any time there's 30, 40 people on it. Think of a stone dropping in a pond, the ripple effects. What happens at Edgewood can affect other schools within the district, again, with feeding patterns, et cetera. So we invited folks from California, Cameron, Monte Vista, Merlinda, Orangewood, of course, Edgewood Middle School, Edgewood High School. Didn't want just administrative voices. Let's have parents, let's have teachers, et cetera. So we are indebted because, again, this odyssey began back in October, and we've invested a lot of time, both not only in those committee meetings, but outside of those committee meetings as well. So I want to pay tribute to that. So we did look at, again, the configurations that currently exist, like Ms. Kaplan explained. Also identifying other opportunities that exist with configurations, but looking deeper at how that would impact instruction, how that would impact, you know, the curriculum components there and staffing and personnel and facilities and all of that. So, again, this, I have to underscore, is a very, very thorough, very, very introspective, analytical process that got us to this evening with this presentation. We really were focusing on student needs. I mean, that was first and foremost. I think with every issue we contemplated was students' needs, that sort of thing. So let's look at the data. It's a good place to look. And, you know, one question that kept coming up was, where does sixth grade belong? K-5, K-6, you know, every district does it differently. And we really took a close eye and looked at that. And what we determined from our readings, if you will, was that it's often a community decision. You know, there is no cookie-cutter approach to that. And what we discovered, which was most important, the research showed, was what transitional program exists. So if children go from fifth grade to another school for sixth grade, what is fourth and fifth grade doing to prepare the kids for that transition? If it's K-6, what is 5-6 doing for that transition to a 7-8? If it's 8th grade going to 9th grade at high school, what's 8th grade doing to prepare? If it's 11th to 12th grade and kids are going off to college, those transitional programs were key, is what we discovered in the research. We want to look at the data and see how kids perform at a K-6 versus at our middle schools that we currently have in the district. So we looked at that as well to see if there's any type of achievement gap between the two configurations. Again, student performance, student needs first. And then we said, well, we're kind of looking at all these issues, carefully analyzing them. well, what criteria and priorities do we think we're going to have as we proceed with this committee? So this is largely what we did the first couple months that we had convened, the issues that we looked at. So like I said, there's a story with each school. So this is the current story of Edgewoods, plural. Two schools, one campus. You'll see that the color scheme we have in this PowerPoint was purposeful in that regard. So the middle school is green. It's the dominant school color, the Wildcats, grade 6 through 8. We have an administrative team and staff. We do have some signature programs that we're fiercely proud of that we feel are very successful, and we do right by kids with those, both intervention and enrichment. We have a bell schedule that's unique to the middle school. And again, a long tradition since 1988 until now, the present, 2014. The high school opened up in 2010. Very proud of that. That was an idea that came to fruition a year or two before we actually opened. And a lot of time has been invested into where we are now. School color is blue. The mascot is the lion. And this was chosen by the students. There's a lot of ownership over that. They didn't inherit that. Grades 9 through 12 now, we opened initially with one grade level and added sequentially one administrative and staff, separate administrative and staff. Again, we've got some signature programs that we've developed over the years as student needs have warranted those. And we have a distinct bell schedule, different start time, different end time than the middle school does. And more of a recent story, though, if you go back pre-1988, a very rich and storied tradition of Edgewood High School. One campus. So we share staff in certain regards. The principal, I oversee both schools. Some teachers, we have approximately 8 teachers that are split assignment, and that number's grown over the years. An issue is just a couple elective teachers. That way we can provide some enrichment opportunities for both schools and capitalize off some of the expertise and talent and experience of both faculties. And then expanded to some core content areas. We've got math and science as well, in addition to foreign language and some of the arts where we're sharing teachers. I've got 8th grade students who are taking Mandarin 1 and can start in Mandarin 2 when they're in 9th grade. I've got 8th grade students who are taking Spanish 1 and can, again, start at Spanish 2. So very proud of that, having two schools on one campus and, again, can share those resources. Our security and custodial staff, one school. Sharing of campus facilities, and that's interesting. You know, the gym, cafeteria, health office, athletic fields, and the main quad are common areas that are cohabited, if you will, different times of the day. Similar goals. When we look at our district strategic plan, all schools in the district, of course, are aligning their single plan for achievement and action plans with that. But at Edgewoods, plural, our plans are very similar. Maybe because there's one principal, but all kidding aside, it's not that. You know, it's when we convene teams to look at issues and goals, et cetera, 9 times out of 10, we arrive at the same destination. A lot of like-minded individuals. And again, that's an alignment piece. Just to do a quick visual, if you see, this is a map of the school, and you know, a picture speaks 1,000 words. If you were to kind of acquaint yourself with the large hand of a clock, think of 6 o'clock, the large hand, that would be the B building. That's the only building on campus besides one building up on at the top, building P, which is exclusively just middle school or just high school. If you look at building C, if you kind of go to about the 4 o'clock, you'll see that, wow, that's got middle school classes, high school, and a couple classes that serve both middle school and high school kids. You look at D building as well, you'll see that mixture. Then you look at the high school side of campus, if we will, that would be E, O, and P, where you see a lot of that yellower, it's gold actually. That's the high school side of campus, but you can see again that there's a green there in the old building. You can also see the red, and I'm sorry to I didn't point out that the red is the common classrooms that have both middle school and high school kids in them with those split assignment teachers. Of course, gold is high school and green is middle. And then you can see the common areas as well. My point of that picture is to show you that we're far more intertwined than I think most people really understand. You know, when we first opened the school, it was that rigid demarcation, two schools, one campus. As we've evolved, so too have our classroom assignments and the intermingling of students and so on and so forth. So criteria for changing school configuration, again, student achievement, student needs first. That was our priority that governed our analysis. And again, we really wanted to give honor to the fact that this district champions choice and flexibility. We have so many different configurations available for students and families, so we really wanted preservation of that. That was critical. Also looking into taking into consideration the existing feeder patterns and trying to look at something that wouldn't be that disruptive. And again, keeping that pathway open for students to enter Edgewood High School at ninth grade. We pride ourselves that about between 30 and 40% of each of our incoming ninth grade classes is comprised of Edgewood Middle School students, but that other 60 to 70% draw from other schools within the district and outside of the district. So we don't want to close those opportunities off to other kids within the district who aren't Edgewood Middle School students. And again, minimize an impact on status quo for our middle school students. If you look at how things are functioning now and some of the successes that we've enjoyed thus far, we wouldn't want to disrupt that for our middle school kids if there was a fusion between the two schools. And again, flexibility for course options for both middle school and high school students. Some of those I already articulated that we're currently capitalizing off of now by pooling resources. And continuity of curriculum and instruction. You know, we pride ourselves, again, what we've done in the way of implementing Common Core State Standards thus far, implementing the IB program at Edgewood High School, and some of the fine instructional programs that we've been able to provide to kids. Working smarter is key, and we're not just talking about for me, for the principal. I don't know how long I'll be at Edgewood High School. I don't know what the future holds, but we have to look at this configuration being viable for the long term. And looking at the current model here, we've got, if we go to one faculty, 612, one bell schedule, but separate lunches. We currently have two bell schedules, and we have two lunches. But by having one bell schedule, that would give us, we have an early release Wednesday at both schools right now. The problem is the middle school gets out at 1:49. The high school gets out at 2:28. There's almost a 40-minute gap. So having teachers be able to collaborate together, both middle school and high school, it's impossible. Looking at one single plan for student achievement instead of two, one school action plan, one professional development plan, one school site council, one PTSA, and one ELAC. Currently, we have two of all of those things. And there's a lot of redundancy. Committee considerations. So we looked at, again, changing the feeder patterns, possibly doing that. Again, how this would impact the community, the whole learning community of West Covina Unified. Again, preservation of parent choice. And again, preservation of programs currently offered. If we were to meld the two together, we would not want to discontinue some of these signature programs that have done well in supporting students' academic, emotional, and social needs and development. Possibility for program expansion. We don't want to say the story of Edgewood's closed, or that's it. We're just going to kind of maintain the status quo of these programs, looking at how bringing the two schools together could actually propel us forward in a lot of regards and respects. And honoring and enhancing the school culture. I made mention of the fact that at Edgewood High School, we're fiercely proud of what we've accomplished in these 3.5 years, from our IB certification to WASC accreditation to California Distinguished School, to admission to CIF, decathlon going to state, the list goes on and on. So we've really developed an identity, a culture, et cetera, and we're really recognized now in the community. Before it was Edgewood's a high school, so we're out there. We're becoming a household name in the community now, which is great, and outside of the district. So want to both preserve that and also enhance that. And again, looking at sharing resources, again, we still have some demarcation, so science labs, computer labs, athletic venues, and things like that. So I think we could still expand more in that regard of pooling resources together. More benefits of one school, more multiple opportunities for intervention and enrichment course offerings. I outlined a few of these enrichment course offerings we already have in existence, but we could do more. More intervention, you're looking at after-school intervention programs, etc. I currently have a program now that's an intervention program for middle school kids where I'm drawing some high school teachers who are participating in that as well. So things like that to better support student needs. Broader access to instructional programs and services. Integrated school-wide activities. You know, we have a poetry slam event for middle school students and a poetry slam event for high school students. There's some redundancy there. Things like that. There's history day for the middle school kids, but we don't do that for the high school. We have academic decathlon for the high school, but we've kind of let pentathlon fall to the wayside. So things like that. I think we can bring some of these things back. If we look at one faculty and one shared model. Shared ownership of student outcomes, we thought that was key as well. Right now, you've got two different schools. We've got action plans and single plans that are similar, but really having both the high school faculties own the middle school's students' performance and vice versa, the middle school really owning the high school. There still is a little bit of a disconnect with that when it comes to ownership of student outcomes. And again, the increased efficiency and try to reduce redundancy through consolidation. And again, I mentioned this a couple slides ago, but the collaboration piece is huge, especially with the onset of Common Core and being able to bring our teachers together. I really can only do that a couple times a year. That's the student release day, the beginning of the school year. We were able this year to bring teachers together, and also January 13th, I think it was, when we had the student release day at the midpoint of the year, bringing both middle school and high school teachers together and have them provide them the opportunity to share best practices and so on and so forth. So that's another opportunity that we're currently unable to capitalize off of now with the two different bell schedules. So we looked at school beliefs, values, expectations, outcomes. Again, how we're going to meet the instructional needs of all students that we currently serve. And again, the culture for the middle school and the high school. And again, overall impact on the community. So after tackling all of these issues and intense consideration and thorough consideration, we came up with some recommendations. Integrate Edgewood Middle School with Edgewood High School into a single school. And what kind of came about was this upper-lower school model, if you will. You know, if you look at, say, San Jose Edison, they're a K-8. You know, there's the middle school, there's the elementary school, one umbrella, but two different schools, an upper school and lower school. So there's times when they come together for articulation, the faculties, other times when they do things that are separate and distinct to their particular unique aspects of their program. So student community input needed. This was key. So we had these meetings on a monthly basis, again, with the folks that I described, but we thought it prudent to go talk to kids. So we had a meeting with high school kids about a week ago and wanted to get their input. So kind of gave them the broad strokes, if you will, everything that I just articulated, and wanted to get their feedback. So we met with Edgewood High School students, and some of them are here in the audience today. What we also did is met with Edgewood Middle School students as well. And what we determined was there's some things that it may better serve us if we leave it to the learning community to decide, as far as school name, school colors, you know, mascot. Do you have one ASB? Do you have two ASBs? The pre-registration process that we currently have for high school students, those that would come, that would matriculate in from Edgewood Middle School and also from other schools within the district, and possibly changing feeder patterns down the road. So we thought we would, again, look at our students and look at members in the community and parents for some insight into that. Those conversations with the high school students yielded that there was a strong school identity, and you know, that's something, again, that we're very proud of that we've developed over the last 3.5 years. But again, how do you maintain that school identity? Edgewood High School is synonymous with a strong academic program and stellar academic achievement. So we want to make sure that that was preserved. Also, again, you know, we're the Lions and so on and so forth. And we have trailblazers and pioneers, kids that took a risk 3.5 years ago to open this school. So we do want to give credence to all of that and give value to all of that. That's very important. And, you know, that piece where kids coming in from different schools in the district or outside the district, you know, if we were to fuse together, you know, those eighth graders at Edgewood Middle School would kind of feel an affinity to both schools because they'd been there. But looking at those kids coming in the ninth grade from other schools and from outside the district, so, you know, how would we make sure that they don't feel like they're outsiders because they weren't at the ground level from sixth grade on? Future considerations, we said, well, you know, there's one thing to look at bringing the two schools together next year, but down the road, we'd maybe look at, again, some of these feeder patterns. Walnut Grove, 6-8, possibly California, sixth graders all going to Walnut Grove. Right now, of that sixth grade class, half of them go to Holland Crest and half of them come to Edgewood Middle School. Montevista sixth graders coming to Edgewood Middle School possibly for seventh grade. And Cameron going to Holland Crest and to Walnut Grove versus half the Cameron kids now currently going to Holland Crest and also going to Edgewood Middle School. So we're looking at some of those feeder patterns and how that would best serve student needs. Quite a lot of information that we presented to all of you for your consideration. Try to give you as a thorough depiction of what we've mulled over the last 4 or 5 months.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. I want to recognize in something that you said that's sort of an overlying theme that I've held for a number of years, and that is this idea of this alternative education opportunities throughout the district. And I think that this program, however it evolves, I think is that particular instance. In, gazillion years ago when my son was going to go into sixth grade, this idea of going to a sixth grade middle school was horrible to my wife and I, and to the extent that we were going to do radical things, until this 12-year-old went to the sixth grade campus at Edgewood Middle School with 2,000 kids or thereabouts and absolutely loved it. And so, you know, our best interests and our best thoughts, you know, were overwhelmed by a little sixth grader. So this is a tremendously difficult thing that you've taken on, and we certainly appreciate everything that you've done of that and everybody that's here that was part of it. This is really important facet of what we can do, and in some way or another, in my opinion, that if we can meld this into one entity, one unit, one cohesive entity in one unit, I think that that's going to be a really strong program. So anyway, I congratulate all of you for everything that you've done and appreciate your time and efforts. So
thank you.
I had asked some questions prior to the meeting. Originally, when this was came up, I thought it was a consensus of the board for us to look at not just this school configuration, but all of the schools, and to see how it would affect everything, because we don't want to make changes here and then say, we wish we would have looked at the broader picture. The questions I had were, what's the capacity of every one of our schools, and where are we at those capacities? The new housing developments.
Do you want us to answer them as you have the questions?
Oh, sure.
Why don't we do that? Because we're prepared to answer those questions.
Okay. The capacity of all the schools, is that the first question? I think our elementary schools right now are what we consider at capacity. They obviously could expand by adding portable facilities. There is land space available at all the schools, some more land than others, so we could add portables there, and that would be able to increase the student population. You could do that basically at any of the schools, but if you're talking about existing buildings, I would say that our elementary schools and our middle schools are pretty much at capacity, with the exception of maybe Edgewood Middle School, because Edgewood Middle School High School shares a very large campus, so it depends on how that gets divided up by the student population. West Covina High School, when we opened Edgewood High School, or reopened Edgewood High School, part of the concern was to reduce the student population at West Covina High School, which it has done, not in the time frame that we had hoped or the numbers we had hoped, but it's about 500 less than when we started. So over the last 4 years, dropped about 500 kids over at West Covina High School, which is necessary. So I wouldn't say they're at capacity, although we ever moved portables, and it's a little bit different for secondary schools because teachers can travel and things like that. So hopefully that answers your question.
The new housing developments. I wanted to know where the boundaries are, and I know that's hard to do at a presentation without a map, but I wanted to know where the current boundaries were for each of the schools and where those new housing developments fell in those and what schools they were going to go, those new housing developments were going to add new students to.
As far as we understand, there's one housing development that's on Lark Ellen, which is just, if I get my directions right, just north of Thyberg Field and the high school, and it's at St. Martha's Episcopal Church, or what used to be there. That area would at elementary school at Feed to Cameron, and that actually is the drawing line between for Cameron to go to Holland Crest or at this time Edgewood. So on that side, the Lark Ellen would go to Holland Crest, and then high school obviously is the entire district. So that's one housing development. The other housing development is, and that's projected to be 45 single family homes. There's another development that is at, it's on Valinda, just, I guess that would be east of Glendora Avenue, and just north of Merlinda. And there's 19 homes there. That particular development is due to be inhabited, say, June. I actually was talking to the salesperson this afternoon. And that would feed into, if I'm not mistaken, Merlinda and Walnut Grove, and then the high schools. The other development is a rather large, yes, 450-capacity apartment complex, as where Wicks Furniture used to be. That particular area is in the grid that would feed West Cove, California, and currently would feed Walnut Grove.
Was it looked at as having one principal at the, did the committees consider this, one principal with two strong vice principals, which almost would act as what in your capacity now, with one person overseeing them, so they can keep, the high school could keep some of the identity that the students work so hard on in creating, and that is an attraction to the students now, because what they're attracted to is the high school and that academic setting, but it's a high school configuration that they're attracted to. And I wouldn't want to lose that. Was it talked about having two very strong principals, vice principals and one principal?
You're saying if there was a reconfiguration of 612?
Well,
or you're saying...
Well, but it's still there was some separation, where the high school could keep its own identity,
sure,
as a high school,
yeah,
which I know the current students worked very hard,
mm-hmm,
doing, and then when you go to sports, they're saying, aren't you middle school still? So they're just getting over where... being recognized as a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the students, and I don't want to misspeak, want to lose that
of course,
that, you know, and their mascot and their colors and everything,
mm-hmm,
they're so proud of. It looks like now even the middle schoolers would have some say on what that would be. And I know those students that are now seniors really took a risk
mm-hmm,
coming to us. And
mm-hmm,
we were hoping for 250, and we were just so thankful we had 200 that first year. Because they really did take a risk coming to us. And then they're the ones who made, plus the staff, made it what it is. And I don't want that to go unnoticed. And I know you did recognize that. But if there was a way for them still to keep that high school identity.
And we think we could achieve that. And that's, again, with that model of an upper school and a lower school. Doing that, again, preserving some of those things. We're in a league now in CIF starting next year. They created the Miramonte League. And we're going as the Lions in our school colors and whatnot. So we wouldn't want to undo anything like that. We could, and I'm just throwing this out, there's been conversation amongst some teachers and whatnot. They brought to me that, you know, the high school's blue, gold, and white. And maybe one common color between the two schools would be blue. And, you know, that would reflect that. And maybe the middle school would be like white and blue. And then they grow into getting gold or something like that. But, again, preserving the... upper school and what we've developed and whatnot. So we have had those conversations. And again, that's a common thread that's resonated, especially amongst our students and even amongst the high school teachers as well.
The slides aren't numbered, but it's the second to the last slide under future considerations. It looks like you were saying Cameron, part of the fifth would go to Holland Crest, and part would go to Walnut Grove. Right now, Walnut Grove is a 7-8. The first line says Walnut Grove would be a 6-8. So the only sixth graders that would go to Walnut Grove would be Cameron.
I think I'm going to have Mr. Seaman answer that question.
That would be correct at this time if you're looking at this configuration here. Part of the reason that we looked at that and part of the consideration that came out of the committee is it seems that some schools are crossing, because those kids that go, that live in the Cameron area, that go to Edgewood, go right by Walnut Grove. And they're traveling a great distance to get to a school, and they're passing a school they could go to. It would be a small sixth grade at this time. And so that would be the consideration, moving them to sixth to eighth grade. The other consideration was Monta Vista having to be bused and travel all the way to Walnut Grove rather than go to Edgewood. So we were looking at trying to make sure all the people that are out of California go to the same school instead of half go to Edgewood and half go to Walnut Grove. That was one thing that came from the committee. The other was Monta Vista going back to Edgewood so that there was no busing of the students to Walnut Grove and the early time they had to go line up to get to the bus and the late time they had to get dropped off would help. And then, you know, there has been some concern that kids are going right past Walnut Grove to Edgewood. So if we turned Walnut Grove into a 6-8, then you could have those Cameron kids going to Walnut Grove.
And how many sixth graders would there be if it's only half of Cameron?
Approximately 60. There's some students that come into Walnut Grove that either transfer in from out of the district. They get about 20 kids initially, and there's about 40, somewhere between 40 and 50 each year that go to Edgewood from Cameron.
The other consideration, in addition to what Mr. Seaman said, is as we looked at the configuration at Edgewood with the two schools, would be important because we would want the high school to be able to maintain approximately 250 kids per grade level. And we were looking at, you know, right now about 40% of the kids from 8th grade move into 9th grade, but what if at some point the whole 8th grade wanted to move into Edgewood? We wanted to make sure there would be room as time goes on for additional kids. So we looked at right now, I believe we have about 550 kids attending Edgewood Middle School. If we could bring that down to 450 and keep that room open for the high school, just looking at the total school population without going over, I think the total school population capacity was about
1,500. We were trying to say if we make Edgewood Middle School a little bit smaller, it creates more space for Edgewood High School on that same physical plant campus. So if we're looking at roughly 1,500 students total between all grade level 6-12 and 450 of them are 6-8, that leaves you roughly 1,000 for your 9-12. And therefore, even if every 8th grader at Edgewood Middle School or lower school decides to go to the upper school or high school, there's still room for people from throughout the district or outside the district to still go to Edgewood High School. Because as you know, we get a number of enrollees from outside the high school and a number of enrollees that may live across the street from West Covina High School that want to go to Edgewood High School. We wanted to make sure we were able to preserve that.
And with the 60 kids at the Walnut Grove, that did not take into account the housing over at Wicks, where those kids would probably go to Walnut Grove as well. So that would leave open space for kids at that housing project.
And if I can add, you know, one of the reasons we opened up Edgewood High School was to offer parents choice, that small learning community. And the original charter was 800 to 1,000. And our current ninth grade class is 250. And my expectation is next year's ninth grade class will be about 250. So we're thinking 2-3 years from now we could top out about 1,000. But again, we wanted to maintain that small learning community identity, and that's something that the students echoed as well, as they like the fact that the high school students, that they are still small as an alternative to the larger West Covina High School.
The feeder patterns for West Cove, California, and that's where the majority of the new students would come from, is the 450 unit complex in Wicks. Would we have to change feeding the boundaries to accommodate all of those students, or could they all be accommodated at West Cove in California, that current configuration of West Cove in California?
I'm just, we haven't really spent a lot of time on this, Camry, so I don't want to speak as if we've made a decision. I think, as Mr. Seaman said, at both West Cove and California, for that to happen, yes, we could, but we'd have to bring portables on. I mean, all of our schools are pretty much at capacity. If we're going to increase population in any of our schools, we would need to consider portables. Currently, we're considering a portable at California right now for looking at our special ed take back. So if we were going to increase the population in any of our elementary schools for whatever reason, yes, we have the real estate to do it, but it would be through portables, not through existing classrooms.
And one of the reasons I'm asking these questions is if we decided that sixth graders needed to be back in elementary schools, how we would do that, or if all sixth graders were going to go to middle school to make more room at our elementary schools. I think when we're looking at the configurations of one school, we need to look at what's happening in the entire district.
And I just want to say we did. That was a lot of conversation we had. And I think, at least for this committee, because we've only stayed with this committee, it was really important to the parents of the committee to keep that flexibility. There were parents on the committee that really like to have the ability to say my child can handle a sixth grade at a middle school versus I really want my child to stay at sixth grade elementary school. And I think of all of our conversations, that became one of the first criteria to consider, that we wouldn't do that, that we wouldn't make all sixth graders at one or the other. And as we looked at the data in terms of their achievement and we looked at the research and the data didn't indicate that that's something we need to do.
So they're both accomplishing the same things, and across all of our sixth grades,
yes,
they're scoring the same. There wasn't any significant difference.
There was not a if I remember correctly, Ms. Hawkins, there wasn't significant difference when we looked at that.
Any questions?
Ms. Shoemaker?
When we originally decided to open Edgewood High School, the community gave full support. The one issue that they had was sixth graders on the same campus as 12th graders. And that was where we came up with the fence that sort of divided the high school from the middle school. I don't see anything in here that addresses that concern, which I know will come straight back to us should we decide to move forward with this configuration. When we originally discussed it, I recall, as Ms. Polis did, that we were supposed to be looking at this globally for our school district. For me, what I really wanted to see was how we could make the campus work so that we start the IB program as part of the middle school. But like Edgewood High School, the IB program, well, only certain students will be interested. So in looking at the whole district, I wanted to be able to see, okay, if we do a 6-8 IB program somehow, we could move students who aren't interested in the program here while we take from other schools in the district that may want their child in the IB program that can go all the way through high school. And I'm not seeing a lot of that here. I see that Walnut Grove possibly making a 6-8. Well, I was on the board when we opened Walnut Grove. One of the things that we discussed about Walnut Grove is the fact that it would be a 7-8. Again, another option for parents who didn't want their sixth grader could stay at an elementary school. They could go to Edgewood. They could, then move to Walnut Grove as 7th and 8th. And so this takes that option away. And I'm not seeing also where it really addresses the fact that we do have significant housing developments coming in, and all of them are going to impact this because the schools are going to be filled with, these incoming students, and we're hearing we're at capacity. Okay, so if we get a certain number of students and we need portables, where are we seeing the budget numbers of what that's going to cost us? Because as far as I'm aware, Walnut Grove is pretty full. I'm not sure how they're going to fit a sixth grade without portables.
Do you want to address, we did talk a lot about the middle years.
Sure. Well, a couple of things you mentioned, which are important questions. One being the culture, the climate for the sixth graders on the campus. We currently have two separate lunches because we have two bell schedules. The proposal is we would have one bell schedule but two lunches. Most high schools do that are large have two lunches. So that segregation would be maintained with the lunches. What was very telling, and with our current changing facilities for PE, we've got a girls' locker room, half of it's for middle, half it's for high, demarcation, and the same thing with the boys' locker room. So we still would maintain those separate changing facilities. And again, two separate lunches, but with one bell schedule. When Ms. Kaplan and I spoke to Edgewood Middle School kids last week and said, hey, what do you think about this? One important question that was asked was, how is it now coexisting with high school? Like, how do you feel about them? Are you being harassed or bullied? I mean, we were very explicit with our questions. If any of you experienced that, we had a good 40, 50 kids in the room, and the answer was no. And we... Well, thank you for that, because we asked about the modeling of behavior. You know, do you see the high school kids engaging in behaviors that you think are inappropriate, et cetera? Well, there may be a kiss or two here or there, you know, that type of thing. But a very important question, well, does that influence your behavior? And they all said no type of thing. So we're coexisting, I think, doing it well. So with Fusion, we don't know if that would change. The IB Middle Years program is it's – I'm glad you brought that up. IB diploma program is high school. It's essentially college courses on a high school campus. It's accelerated the rest of it and rigorous program. IB middle years, basically the IB learner profile, there's all these attributes. IB middle years is a school-wide program. Everybody partakes in it. It's not just kids that want to be part of the IB program for a certificate or diploma. So really what it is looking at things from critical thinking skills and problem solving, et cetera. So we want that to touch every aspect of the child's experience. And the IB Middle Years program can go from 10th grade all the way down to 6th. And they don't recommend you roll it out all five grade levels initially. It could be 10th and 9th and then permeate down to 8th, et cetera. That's something we don't want to tackle starting next year. You know, it's something that we may consider down the road, but we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves with that.
There was talk that that's definitely a direction we want to look to and go to, but in terms of the recommendation for next year, that it was definitely something for the future, but not for next year.
Well, and you just hit exactly on my point, which is the middle years is required participation, where that's why I said parents will need and want to make the decision that this is a program they're interested in versus what may be offered at Holland Crest or Walnut Grove, because you don't have the option like you do at the high school, Edgewood High School, where you can go to the IB high school and choose not to go for the IB diploma. You can choose to have the certificate. You can choose just to be there and experience the IB program without actually moving towards the end result. You don't have that with the middle years. And what I'm hearing right now is that the plan on the integration is really to keep them separate, but just put them under the same umbrella so that it's more efficient. Because you're saying you're going to keep the lunch schedule separate, you're going to keep the locker room separate, they're not going to have any more interaction. I understand that the teachers will collaborate more. So without adding the IB component to the middle school, why are we doing this right now? Why aren't we waiting until we're ready to do the IB program? Why aren't we waiting until we know what our student levels are going to be based on the new housing developments coming in? Why aren't we waiting until we've looked at what our patterns are going to be in the schools that are affected before we start changing the school that's just getting set?
Well,
I've watched, as Ms. Polo said, the Edgewood High School develop an identity that had been lost when the schools when Edgewood High School closed in 1988. I mean, for me, when I saw on here that community input on a school name, that's simple. It is going to remain Edgewood. Whatever comes after it, the community is going to want it to be Edgewood. I mean, from the time I was in the district, I started in seventh grade until the time I became a board member and Edgewood High School reopened. The number one question was, when are you going to reopen Edgewood High School? When is Edgewood going to be high school again? So I can't imagine we would change the name. And so I know why you want to consolidate. I see where it could be more efficient, but I just don't have enough answers on what the best way would be to do that.
what would be most effective for us. I think at this point, just integrating them doesn't address the global concerns that the board asked to be addressed when we talked about reconfiguring Edgewood. Because originally it did come to us as, what could we do about Edgewood? And from there, the board very clearly said, well, if we're going to look at Edgewood, we need to look at the district because Edgewood's a big part of it.
Well, again, we did look at the district, and we did ask those questions of the committee. I think I just want to talk about the middle years. One thing about the middle years program, it's very compatible to Common Core. So when you look at what the goals of the middle years program, it would be very compatible to what we're already doing in terms of the Common Core and our strategic plan. Again, it's something that you would start with 10th and then 9th grade and move down. But at this particular time, we felt it wasn't, I mean, we certainly could go back to the drawing board and have that. I mean, that's one of the reasons we've come to the board, is to get more direction in terms of more information that you might need. It was discussed in depth in terms of that, but no recommendation came forward. In terms of starting it now, it was a recommendation that that would be a direction we would move, but not in terms of starting it now.
And with the Common Core standards, and when you look at the linear aspect of it, especially with 6th grade through 12, we're missing opportunities from that collaboration, because it's not just for adults to collaborate. It's for it to affect positive change in the classroom when you look at pedagogy and so on and so forth. So that's one positive byproduct. We wanted the two lunches just, again, you know, there's age discrepancies between and developmental issues and things like that. There's also nutrition services. There's different guidelines with nutrition services as well. So we wanted to remain compliant with those aspects. But again, just capitalizing off of some of the opportunities that we can't currently do now, with pooling resources, with the expertise from our faculties, again, to provide more services for kids. And so it's sure there is that aspect of redundancy and efficiency, but also just missed opportunities that we've identified along the way as we've evolved.
Thank you very much, everyone who worked on this project from the first year that Edgewood opened. I remember Mr. Travatore and I talking, and I said, I'd like to see this go to a consolidated school. And so it feels like, oh my gosh, this actually could potentially take place. So I'm thrilled that there is support out there. I'm glad the students were open to it, and I value their concerns, and I value everyone that sat on the committee, because it takes time and energy to sit on a committee. For me, and as I was campaigning, I had the benefit of campaigning and hearing from the community as I went to many homes door to door and listened to parents. And I know it's my personal belief, but I was hearing it validated out in the community that sending the sixth graders back to elementary. And I know, as Mr. Cox said, we value that there's choice here in our district, that we have the ability to choose. You can go to Hollingcrest, where it's 6-8, and that's a very small learning community, so it feels very safe. Edgewood has a very large campus. So those little sixth graders, I was hearing from sixth grade parents that were unhappy over at Orangewood that they had to get onto the campus, and then I heard from very, very few others that said, great, good opportunity. And so when I, as I was campaigning, I was hearing, let's send them back to sixth grade. And I had to talk some people through. We have many options here. You know, you can go to Hollingcrest. You have these options here. But people felt that when it came to Edgewood, it was so large a campus, and they felt that their kids weren't developmentally ready. So I personally, and then again hearing from people out as I was campaigning, value the 7 to 12. And I feel also developmentally, I've got a 7th grader at home too, and a whole bunch of 7th grade friends right now. And there is, and I understand the transition is how we prepare them best for middle school, but there is a difference in some of what Mrs. Shoemaker was saying about 6th grade. I didn't hear my little 5th grader talking about dating till she hit middle school, and all her friends, and all the secret boyfriends and girlfriends. And I have a very open relationship with my child, so I'm hearing all about it. You know, and then there's that whole other, and I've gone to all the poetry slams, because y'all know I'm big on the poetry slams with Edgewood, and there's all this dating and breaking up and heartbreak and boyfriend and girlfriend, and again, things that little sixth graders weren't necessarily thinking about till they hit that middle school environment. So again, and then, you know, we as parents, we look and we want to keep our kids young. And I understand they have to grow up, and I can't wait for mine to go to college. I keep telling them it's an exciting time. You're going to love college. But we as a society criticize that our kids grow up too quickly, and then we do things like put them in more grown-up situations, from their clothes to their musical taste to even the middle school years. So for me, the seventh grade configuration was good, but I understand here in the district we have to take into consideration portables and busing and things like that. So I am thrilled about this, and I know you'll all come up with a really good plan. However, I'd like to see Orangewood get some portables to keep those sixth graders there and really focus on a 7-12 strong program. And we need to keep the room there, not just for school students coming in from other components of the district, but in growing Edgewood just a little bit at that 9-12, which is a typical high school years, because there's this ripple going on in the community that I keep hearing and beyond. I have board members in other districts saying, we're losing our kids to you. And I said, good, step up. Step up. So I want to make sure to keep that open. And I think we'll have more of that flexibility if we're a 7-12 configuration. And at this time, if we just keep Orangewood with the sixth graders, bringing them back to that sixth grade and leaving Hollingcrest at that 6-8 stage where they are small and they feel like, okay, this is a little more incubated and the students are. So that's me. But I'm thrilled about this. I was, again, just a I know over at San Jose, my kids are at San Jose, and you all knew that. They took on the Sharks, but every grade level is a different shark. I had no idea some of the sharks that existed. I was learning as my child went up, and even at the middle school, where it has a separate identity than the elementary, they have a shark to represent the different houses. So that's an idea. I don't know. I did not research. I apologize before this board meeting about lions. I didn't look at all the different types of lions, and maybe the middle school could be a different type of lion, and then you graduate to a king lion or something that's, you know, a larger lion. So I'm not aware, but that's something that they do, and I loved your idea about colors. But I'm thrilled about this because I want to see that IB Middle School's program, and I want it to be a preparatory environment. Of course, you know, I don't know how much support I'd get, but uniforms would be awesome. Little blazers for the kids and, you know. But anyway, that's me to create that real, you know, this is a preparatory environment in which we're preparing kids for that either college or career. But that's me. But I'm thrilled. And thank you, everyone, for doing this. So I'm leaning, and I'd like to see a 7-12, and I think I laid out all my concerns. I think you wanted to step in.
Well, I just want to say, you know, first of all, are there any more comments before I say what I need to say?
Oh.
Okay. We looked at all of that. And from this committee, not anybody else, this committee felt that going to a 7-12 would be too disruptive to all the schools in the district, that it would be too disruptive for the district, that if we were going to consider one school, and this is just the committee speaking, we felt that I don't think we would have gotten consensus to come to you to make it one school because it was so disruptive to the elementary schools, and the elementary school parents were concerned about that. That was not something that they wanted to see in terms of all kids being at sixth grade at an elementary school on this committee. I'm just speaking about this committee. We've kind of done our work in terms of looking at all of these options and bringing them to you, and we're at a point right now that we need some direction. The one option we didn't talk about that I just need to throw out there was if the decision was to keep it a middle school and a high school, and it wasn't what we recommended, so I didn't bring it, but the feeling was that it would have to have two separate principals, that at this point as we grow the high school, that if the direction the board wanted to give us was no, we really want to keep them as a middle school and a high school, that we really needed to look at having two administrators. And we talked about that a lot, and because of many of the things that you folks have said tonight. And one of the concerns that we had, and I think I brought this up, it was mine, because I've been in a situation where we had two principals in one campus, that it becomes very difficult to advocate for your kids. I mean, right now we have one principal who's advocating for all students on the campuses, and so the decisions are made based on what's the need of all students and kind of being able to prioritize that. Unfortunately, it doesn't mean it can't work when you have two administrators on one campus with one cafeteria, one gym, one field, that it becomes competing in terms of the needs of one school over the other school. So what we were feeling in terms of the committee and looking at this school, that we liked the idea that it was one principal looking at the needs of all kids, that we're still only talking about 15, you know, with the number of kids, that we really liked that model. So we're at a point right now that we've done our work. We've kind of come to you with what our best thoughts are, and we need direction from you in terms of what the next steps are. I've heard different opinions from different board members. I don't know that I have a consensus of what our next step should be as a committee or what our next piece of work would be. And that's really, we wanted to bring you up to date to where we were with our thinking, but we don't feel we can go any go forward without more direction at this point.
Okay. I'm 712. Bring it all together. I'm excited about that. I be middle years in high school. That's where I'm at.
Well, I thought this was information only. I had expressed my concerns earlier, and I appreciate you coming back with that information. But then I was told there was a lot, you've had a lot of time to absorb all this information and to do more research. And the things that we had originally heard was it was going to be an IB prep school, it was going to be a 7 through 12. And then we get the recommendations that don't include those things. It's difficult to give direction when all of a sudden you get the packet on Thursday and then, you know, and no fault of your own, but you were gone Thursday and Friday. And again,
we're bringing the information to you in terms of where we are. We're not saying we want you to vote tonight. That's not the purpose that we brought it to you. But we wanted you to know what our thinking was so we could get some consensus from the board of, you know, is the consensus of the board, we like the concept, but we really want you to go back and look at starting the middle years much sooner or making it that academy. We just need to know, is this something the board would consider? If the board would not consider and we really want to keep it to schools, we just need to know where else to go with this, because we're coming to you with our best thinking, and now we're sharing with you our best thinking, and what we need from the board is direction in terms of, okay, thank you very much. You know, here's some more work we need, some more information we need. What are our next steps as a committee?
I haven't campaigned as recently as you, but one of the concerns that I heard over and over again was they wanted the new high school. This is all of the years that I went. And then a lot of people had trouble with sixth grade in a middle school. So if they had trouble with sixth grade in a middle school, we had many parents very concerned about sixth graders when it was separated at Edgewood. Is there a way to take a poll, like I know we've done different polls, to find out and let parents know that their students are in fifth grade? We're thinking about reconfiguring everything. Where do you feel you would like to see your students? Because I just hear Eileen saying that she just recently heard there was still some real concerns about that. And I appreciate the parents who sat on the panel. So to have that addressed before we make any firm decisions, I would like to know about those 60 students at sixth graders at Walnut Grove, how that's going to look, how much that's going to cost, just to have that's maybe two classes of sixth grade. Are they going to be able to have the electives that they would have if they were on a traditional middle school? Are they going to, you know, have five different classes, or is it going to be set up like they were still in a K-6 mm-hmm. and only be a sixth grade isolated? And I know they tried to do that at Edgewood for a time where they had that little sixth grade academy, and I know it's not like that anymore. So it doesn't really seem doable to have 60 sixth graders with the other seventh and eighth graders. I just don't know how that's going to work. So I'd like that looked at. If we were only thinking of one school, now we can't make just Orangewood sixth grade because we have other feeder schools into Edgewood. So that's not going to work. So I don't know. If you can really look at those, where the sixth graders are going to be, what that's going to look like, and what the parents, I appreciate the parents that were on the board, and the parents that are going to have students going, what they would want us to do, and then how many relocatables are going to West Cove and K-6 California hold? What are the expectations of the increased numbers? I know that's going to be really hard to do. It would just be an educated guess from the 450 to 60 units that are going to be at the WICs. I've heard different things about how many units are going to be there. And would we have to change the boundaries if there were too many? How many relocatables can you put on a school? The other two small, and I know right now, Monta Vista has 700, has more students than any other. And even with 20 more students, where are you going to put those students? At not Monta Vista, I'm sorry, at Merlinda. I mean, so we really need to look at those feeding patterns and are there capacity, and I know Merlinda has sixth grade. If that sixth grade went somewhere else, they would have capacity. But what we're hearing is the parents don't want that. They don't want their sixth graders at a middle school. And maybe that's not the consensus, because the parents that were on the committee felt sixth graders were fine.
And they felt there should be, the parents on the committee felt strongly that there should be an option. They didn't feel that one of the things they valued from this, our district, was that we had those options. It seems to me, just listening to everybody right now, that certainly we didn't want to do a survey or a poll without coming to the board and seeing if this was even something that the board wanted to entertain, but it almost feels like the next step is to do some kind of survey or poll to see if parents would be interested in a reconfiguration. It seems like that would be the place to start with answering all these. That would be something the committee couldn't do without coming to the board, and I think what I'm hearing is that would be the next step, is to get some sense of our parents. Is that what I'm hearing? I just want...
fifth grade.
Well, but also the capacity of the schools.
It really is everybody.
We don't want to offer something we can't do.
Right.
Right. That's
so
true.
If we can't have sixth grade at every school, we need to be careful how we phrase that, because that physically may not be able to be an option with the new developments coming in, because we don't have any new schools. All of our schools, because, you know, we might have had Cortez, but we've already decided what we're going to do with Cortez. There's not an empty school in our district anymore, so there is no more flexibility with opening another school.
So, in my opinion, and most of it's just anecdotal, I would like to see this as being a full-on sixth opportunity. I think that we have sites that we can't put sixth graders on because we just don't have the room for it right now. And so I think there are parents and kids that are in a position where that sixth grade opportunity at Edgewood is a very positive one. And it gives long duration, long development within that community, buy into that school for a longer period of time. So I don't know, this is tough. This is very difficult. So I hope you've got some idea of what we could do. I hope that we can take some sort of polling, figure out where we're going to do, look at some different configurations, and then come back and let's do this again.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, everyone, for your work. Thank you.
Thank you for your consideration.
And next item on the agenda is item number 7, the California School Board Association Delegate Assembly. Val?
I'd like to put forth Sheila Neen, Cami Poulos, and Paul Solano. If anybody doesn't have an objection.
Well, I was wondering if to maybe up our chances of getting Cami on, if we could just bullet vote. So, I mean, for me at this point, I would move Cami Poulos and go from as our, can, you know, as our vote.
Anybody else?
Let's
just general comment of what you want to do,
okay.
And then we'll go. Then I'll entertain a specific motion.
Yeah.
And I'll come back to you on that as a motion, if you would, Mr. Flowers. Do you understand the concept of what the California School Board Association is and the delegates?
Yes. Come
forward?
Yes.
All right. Okay. What do you want to do?
Well, I'd appreciate the opportunity, since last time I didn't have the support of this board. It would be great if if we could bullet vote, because I know some of the other school districts are doing that. And to even have the capability of being on, I think that needs to be done at this point.
Okay. Well, I know I wouldn't support a bullet vote. I do support, and I put forth your name, and I want to vote for you. But Shilonine has done an amazing job, and right now she's on the nominations committee. So she has work that she needs to complete this year, and she's been very, very active in Region 23C.
I'm sure she's going to make it.
You never know. You never know. So I would like to give the opportunity to put forth her name, but I do want to vote for Ms. Pulo. So I don't know Javier Romero. I tried calling around. Very few people know. But I do know Paul Solano, and he has been on the district a long time and has worked very hard. And Bassett has not had any representation for a while. So I don't know how you want to do it. If you want to vote one by one.
No.
But I put forth Shilonine, Cami, and Paul.
All right. Is there a second? Let's do it that way. For the three. Is there a second for the three? There's no second.
Okay.
And then we had a motion for the bullet vote for Cami Polis. Is there a second for that?
I'll second that.
Second.
Okay. We'll let Mike second it.
Okay. So it's been moved by Jessica Shoemaker and seconded, I'll accept Mike Flowers, to vote only for Cami Polis to serve on the CSBA Delegate Assembly for Region 23C. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion carries 3-2 with Cox and I mean Miranda Jimenez voting no. Next item on the agenda is number 12 is on consent. Item 18, a budget revision. Generally speaking, in the past, for several years now, we've let these budget revisions go forward. But with the new board member, I thought we'd take this opportunity to share some of the changes as we go through the budget process and give us a little bit of an update on where we stand with respect to the budget, if you would.
Okay. And as President Cox said, there's probably about 7 or 8 times that I'll stand in front of this board throughout the year, kind of giving you an update of where we're at. And the minute I leave this room, things change. I was sitting there thinking my niece has a little baby. She's about 2 or 3. I take a picture of her. I see her 2 months later. She looks different. She looks different. But we keep doing that. So these are really snapshots, these budget revisions. I'm going to be back on March 11th to do the second interim report. And to show you, and there won't be a lot of changes, and there should not be a lot of changes, but we want to bring those to your attention. Overview, we're talking about the general fund budget. Come on up here. Or no? Thanks. Okay. General fund budget, there's unrestricted funds, and there's restricted funds, and then combined funds together. The unrestricted funds, that makes up about 80% of the revenue. Those dollars, there's not a lot of restrictions on how you spend that money. Your restricted funds, typically your federal dollars, your Title I, your special ed, your Title II, comes with restrictions. You have to spend it according to how they say you're supposed to spend it. And there's some state categorical dollars, too, that are restricted. A good example is lottery. Some of the lottery money is unrestricted. Some of it's restricted. And so we have to pay attention to that as we do our budget. One of the things that we're doing this year is we're showing snapshots here from the original budget, which we brought back on June 25th, the revised budget, the first budget revision was on November 12th, and then budget revision number 2, which is today. So you can kind of see the history of what's happened. And you'll notice when you look at this, the revenue limit was $48 million, and these are all in millions, $48 million, and then in November it went up to 58, and the other state went from 10.32 down to 1.65. Well, what happened there? We didn't know about LCFF back in June. It wasn't official, but by November it was. So LCFF, more money comes in under sort of unrestricted, what used to be the revenue limit, and those state categoricals, which to some extent were restricted, they had some requirements to them, those went down. Overall, original budget, we said we were going to be at $61.36 million in revenue. We went up a little bit at the first budget revision. And since budget revision one, we've gone up to $63.48 million. That's probably going to be typical as we move throughout the year. We don't always know what the revenue is going to be. Revenue is based on ADA. It's based on enrollment. And as we get a clearer picture of that, we can better estimate what our revenue is going to be. I'm very good at predicting the final score of a baseball game in the bottom of the ninth inning. It's a little tougher when you're in the first inning. When we look at the expenditures, you can see what's happened here. Let's just look at from budget revision one to budget revision two. One of the things that we do is we look at our spending patterns. And one of the things we noticed for certificated salaries is our sub-costs are a little higher. Sometimes it happens, what we budgeted for, and then when people are out sick. So we had to increase those costs. Also, under the materials and supplies and services and operating expenses, we had some technology needs that we had to increase the budget. These are not expenditures. These are what we estimate is going to be the final numbers when we get to the end of the year. So our expenditures have gone up a little bit. It's nice that the revenue went up more than the expenditures. Important to note, just 80% of our expenditures are in salaries and benefits. It's in people. There are some other things that we have we do have some control over, but not much. Utilities. The amount of money that we spend on utilities, when we look at those operating expenses, $5.64 million, $2 million of that is just in utilities. The electric bill alone is $1.3 million. So if you thought you had a high electric bill, water in this district is $500,000. The trash bill is $70,000. So there's some big ticket items there that really... We try to do things to make it a little bit more efficient, but sometimes these are fixed costs. So let's talk about the restricted funds a little bit. Here, not so much on LCFF. LCFF is mostly unrestricted, but here there are some restricted funds under that. Federal, this is where your Title I, your Title II, your special ed, other state revenue. When we have some, the Prop 39 money came in, that's why it increased from Revision 1 to Revision 2. We received about $139,000 of that money, which is the first third, and we'll get the rest as the year goes on. The interesting thing about restricted revenue is when you receive the restricted revenue, you also have to increase your restricted expenditures. They say, we're going to give you this money for Title I, but you've got to tell us you're going to spend it down here. So the two should go up and down accordingly. When we look at our expenditures, and they did go up a little bit. We got a little bit more money, and they went up about $300,000 on the restricted expenditures. Some of those, again, remember when we talked about the $139,000 that we received in the Prop 39 money? Well, now we had to put that down under the services and operating expenses. That goes in there. There were also some other costs for substitutes, for trainings. The materials and supplies budget went down, but the certificated salaries went up. Where money was budgeted in one area, they said, we're not going to spend it there, we're going to spend it up here. So money does move on budget. At the beginning of the year, they don't know that they're going to spend it on teacher substitutes. But as the year progresses, oh, that's it, so we're not going to buy materials and supplies, let's spend it up here. So that's why one goes up and one goes down. So the good news is when we combine all of these and we look at where we were almost 8 months ago, we were projecting an ending balance of $15.44 million. We were deficit spending quite a bit, and that improved at the first budget revision. And budget revision two, now we are projecting an ending balance of $16.46 million, only deficit spending by $420,000. What I expect will happen, absent any major hiccups, is there won't be big changes on the second interim, which we'll present next week or at the next board meeting, but we'll come back in the first part of May, and I would expect that ending balance to be possibly a little bit higher, not a lot, but as we're getting closer, of course, some things could happen. There could be some unexpected expenses that come up. Have to purchase some things. Major servers go out, and now we have to buy stuff. So that's major hiccups. The good news is we're moving in the right direction, and we are just spending a little bit more than we're bringing in. This budget is very similar to your own budget. You can't spend more on an ongoing basis than you bring in. If you do, that means you're going into your savings. And sometimes that happens, but that's a one-time expense. When you start doing ongoing expenses, if you're spending more than you're bringing in, eventually you run out of money. And it just doesn't work. When we look at that $16.4 million, and I know that there are probably people that look at that and they say, well, why is that there? What are you doing with that money? Well, that money, as we see here, it's all broken down into different parts. The first thing is the retiree benefit reserve. We have an obligation to our employees, present and future, to provide them with the medical coverage that we said we were going to. And we have to set money aside for that. I don't anticipate that the district is just going to close up shop, but in the event that we do, we still have an obligation. So that's what that $1.1 million is there for. It goes up and down a little bit depending on how many people have retired, and it fluctuates. The deficit factor LCFF reserve, we've set aside $2.9 million of our ending balance because we don't know what's going to happen next year. If for some reason funding doesn't come in, we may have to use that money. Smarter balance assessment, we know that we're getting ready for that. There's a lot of technology involved in that too. And so between that and the technology reserve, $3 million can go very fast in a district with almost 10,000 students. Common Core standards, for the implementation, deferred maintenance, our buildings need, you get the idea. We have to have money set aside just as you would in your own budget for when your car breaks down or you have to do things around your house. That's the combined ending balance. So all in all, good news on the budget revision. We're moving in the right direction, and we will be back on March 25th to give you an update on the second interim. Don't expect a big change. We're working on it now. Might be slightly better, but nothing major.
Can I just ask you to clarify something?
Uh-huh.
You talked about you can't spend more than you bring in.
Yeah.
And I just want to clarify that we are, by next year, we will not, I mean, we're moving away from that. It's not that
right.
We're continuing to do that, but that the prediction for next year is we will not be in that situation.
Right. This district has, in the past few years, been spending more than they brought in, and the ending balance was much larger, and we were getting to that point where could not go any lower. But that is right. Next year, we're projected to be not deficit spending. The extra money that the district did receive this year, as things are getting better, is filling a hole. It's filling a hole of deficit spending of $4 million that was going on just to bring us back to a level of a balanced budget. And so that's good news. It's a difficult concept to, hey, we have more money. Well, we were deficit spending, and we were using our savings, and we couldn't do that for very long. And so that's what that money comes in and gets us back to where we're flush again. So it's good news. It's good news. But it still need to be cautious, because if you turn around and start giving money out on an ongoing basis, that gets you back into deficit spending again.
Good. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Questions or comments?
For the board discussion, if you can, I have seemed to misplace my open house dates. Can you email me the dates for all the schools? Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm past it. I'll second it. I'm sorry.
Who moved it?
Jessica did.
And who seconded
it? I did.
And what?
To accept the budget revision as presented.
Great. What's the vote?
I don't know. What's the vote? I'm voting yes.
Are there any objections? Motion so ordered.
Thank you, sir. I'm sorry I jumped ahead.
Any further Board of Education discussion?
That was it. I just want the open house dates. I can't find mine.
We've got a list of dates to remember. And Thursday night, we have the public forum. So
I'm excited about
seeing everybody
that.
There. Yes. With no other business, the meeting's adjourned at 9:15.
If the board wants to come a little early, starts at 7, if the board wants to come a little early.